Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living in the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we have a special show, a show that I'm looking forward to, because in this day and age of our healthcare system, it's time that people learn how to take care of themselves, really. And I say to patients daily, it seems that you really want to stay healthy. You do not want to enter into the system because it may not be something that you want. I think our bodies are extremely powerful, and it's wonderful to have somebody on who can speak about a more functional, holistic approach to our bodies. And I wanted to welcome today Ms. Bridget Shea. She's a licensed acupuncturist, herbalist, and author. She has two books, Handbook of Chinese Medicine and Ayurveda, An Integrated Practice of Ancient Healing Traditions and Cultivating Your Microbiome, Ayurvedic and Chinese Practices for a Healthy Gut and a Clear Mind. The two disciplines that she speaks about, I think, are really the underpinning of our healthcare and how we take care of ourselves. So, Ms. Shea, I wanted to thank you so much for joining me and welcome you to the show today.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
You know, I really learned over the course of my career how important the gut is to our health. I think we take it for granted. I think we punish it on a daily basis. And the more I learned about it, the more, you know, I really wanted to understand the exquisite nature of our GI tract. You know, there's a lot of things on TV that talk about probiotics and all of this, you know, commercialized supplements that are out there. I wanted to basically touch base with you and pick your brain about how you came to really focus on the microbiome and why do you think it's so important?
Well, when I was writing my first book, Handbook of Chinese Medicine and Ayurveda, I came across a report that the mesentery in the body was recognized as an organ, finally. The mesentery in Chinese medicine is known as the Mouyuan, or the membrane source, and it is its own special structure that has its special structure and function in the Chinese medicine way of looking at the body and at health. And to see that it was finally recognized in Western medicine was really exciting to me. And it got me thinking about the microbes in the body and the fact that in Chinese medicine, we look at the Mouyuan as a place where pathogens can linger in the body. And we have specific treatments geared toward helping the body to resolve those pathogens. And so I just kind of went down this rabbit hole thinking about all of the possibilities for how the microbes in the body work through the mesentery and interact with the intestines. And not only that, but with the rest of the body. Because sometime later, we discovered that there is also a structure in the body called the interstitium, which in Chinese medicine has been recognized for millennia as the sanjiao. All of the membranous sheaths, the connective tissue in the body, and the fluid that passes through it. So that's what really got me, that really sparked my interest in investigating the microbiome further and in understanding it more from a Western medicine standpoint and figuring out what the connections are between the microbiome from a Western medicine standpoint with what the Chinese and the Indians have been teaching for thousands of years.
Now, with your take, and I really appreciate it, but I find, am I outside of the box in thinking that way? Do you find that standardized medicine, or doctors who practice standardized medicine, are becoming more aware of this? Because this is really going back to basics. And what you just described is the cellular approach, right? not just masking it, not just doing things to either speed up the gut or slow it down, you know, from an artificial medication standpoint. Are more doctors like myself coming to think this way?
Absolutely. That's been my experience in interacting with patients and hearing about their experiences with their physicians and specialists, that they are recognizing that these microbes in the body have a huge role to play in our hormonal balance, in a role to play in our inflammatory response, in our, obviously, our gastrointestinal functioning. And so it's almost like for the first time in several years, I had somebody come in just a week or so ago who said that their gastroenterologist didn't feel as though she could benefit at all from probiotics, which I found sort of interesting because most doctors now I find are actually recommending them.
You know, a patient of mine told me that as well. And also that vitamin D was unnecessary. All sorts of things go on out there. And the more patients are able to, you know, access specialists and practitioners like you, I think it gives them a lot more power to walk away from, you know, doctors who don't think, and in my opinion, they're not really about health. It's just status quo and conveyor belt driven medicine. But unless we as patients and practitioners take the lead and start really accessing our brains and thinking about how we can stay healthy. And from what you described, you just described it being the most, to me, sounds like the most important system in the body. Because if it controls things like hormones, if it controls digestion, if it controls your immune system, then those things are like integral to having a healthy body and being able to recover. Is that a way to think about it?
Absolutely. It is a way to think about it. And some researchers are even calling our microbiota the microbial organ. So it hasn't technically been classified as that, as far as I know at this point, but it is being looked at that way by people who are steeped in it every day. And another thing that goes alongside what you just said about the microbes in the body being highly influential in every aspect of our health is that I think we need to start thinking of ourselves in terms of the fact that we are congruent with nature, that we are nature. So not looking at ourselves as separate from nature, but as made up of and intricately interacting with nature. And I think that that will help us wrap our heads around more so this interplay of the microbial cell interaction in the body, and also how we take in and how we emit microbes and how we interact with the world around us, how we are influenced by climactic changes and how those climactic changes manifest in our body through the production or reduction of microbial communities based on the seasons, for example. So seeing the body and the mind as a complete interplay with the rest of nature and as a part of nature and as nature, I think is really, really important.
Can we expand on that? Can you also think of our interactions with each other as a way of affecting our microbiome? Negative environments, being energetically depleted emotionally, do these things also affect the microbiome?
From what I found in the research I did for this book, everything affects the microbiome. Everything. How flying affects the microbiome, time zone changes, absolutely our chronic emotional states. So being in negative environments chronically, we know it affects our inflammatory response and our digestive functioning, and it also it affects the microbiome, how we feel, what we do, how well we sleep, what time we go to sleep, what time we eat, what we eat, our exercise, if we're coming into contact, if we have pets in our environment, the microbial signature of an individual that we're around all the time, you know, the people in our families, these all influence us, and our microbial imprint also influences them.
It seems like such a dynamic transfer from what you described. you think of it as being static in the gut and locked in some way. But when we speak, when we touch each other, when we interact in an environment where we're all sharing the same space, it sounds like that the dynamic nature can be, you know, applied to that as well. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. And the visual I like to give people is that of Pigpen from the Charlie Brown series. You know, yeah. Pigpen wandered around with this cloud of dust and things around him, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we all thought Pigpen was like really gross and stuff. He was very earthy. and that's really what we all look like. We're all wandering around with this microbial cloud, it's called, that emanates from us. And we exchange microbes from that cloud with the people that we're interacting with. We leave the microbes on the chairs we sit in public spaces and in our homes. And those microbes can then be picked up. We absorb metabolites from the air through our skin and we breathe them in. So there are many ways that we are interacting and exchanging microbial information without even knowing it.
That's fascinating. So if it's that dynamic and it's so affected by really our, not just our environment, but our mental status in a way, then how can we, if let's say somebody is out of balance, they're having issues with feeling depressed or anxious, is there something that they can do from a energetic standpoint? Because you have other modalities that you do, I mean, yoga, meditation, a lot of things that you also, you know, believe in and you know, have courses for. Are those things that can help people from a medicinal standpoint actively engage and then change their microbiome to the better or for the better?
It has been my experience that those practices do make a difference for people, and they do have a profound impact on them emotionally and mentally and physically. I haven't done before and after studies, of course, with, you know, people having a stool test, for example, and then, you know, 6 months later after a rigorous lifestyle change doing another stool test. But I can see objectively their progress, you know, throughout that time that they're engaged in those self-cultivation and reflection practices. And I oftentimes recommend that people look to ancient wisdom such as that in the yogic teachings or in the teachings of China in Tai Chi and Qigong and Chinese medicine, because those teachings are very heavily rooted in the fact that we are connected to nature, are expressions of nature, and that by following natural rhythms and inclinations, we can bring ourselves more into a state of wholeness. And that state of wholeness includes our mind, our emotions, our physicality, our energetics, and our microbial inhabitants.
It sounds like we have so much control over our bodies if we really key in on that. I think we learn so much, learn helplessness in the Western healthcare system. It's a pill. It's something outside of yourself. If you take it, it automatically will change things, you know, and that mindset, I think, is counterintuitive and counterproductive from what you just described. So, for example, if someone's written a prescription, and they take it and it, like an antibiotic, for example, how do you think that that will affect the, I should say, how the synergy of the microbiome and the body work? Can you recover if you've taken an antibiotic?
Well, what they've shown is that, yes, you can, but there's no guarantee that your recovery will look like the same microbial signature that you had before you took the antibiotic. And that can go for anything. That can go for any substance that we ingest. It can go for any trauma that we experience. Everything does affect the microbial signature in the body. And the health of the microbiome, at least in the gut right now, is being measured in terms of its diversity. So the more diverse microbial signature you have, the more robust your microbiome is said to be. And that's because sometimes we may come into contact with a pathogenic influence that will crowd out or, kill the good some of the good microbes in the gut. And we want to have other types of microbes that do the same things that those beneficial microbes that are now decreased in population used to do. And so it's not just an issue of having a certain species of microbes that are high in the gut to help keep us healthy, but of having a diverse amount of types of species of microbes that work together in the body to keep us healthy. So yes, and like for example, with antibiotics, they say it can take anywhere from 6 months to 2 years to regain that diversity.
Wow, that puts a whole nother spin on it. When people come into my office, you know, saying that they've been on 4 and 5 different rounds of antibiotic, it really means now to me that I have to spend a lot more energy resetting their gut. And let's take our first break, because I'm curious to know what your thoughts are on how people can replete their gut if they've had an insult of some kind. So let's take our first break and come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Bridget Shea, and she's the author of Cultivating Your Microbiome, Ayurvedic and Chinese Practices for a Healthy Gut and a Clear Mind. She teaches yoga, meditation, breath work, and energy healing since the 90s, and she teaches and practices acupuncture, herbal and energy medicine at her clinic, Ageless Healing Arts in Saratoga Springs, New York. And before the break, Ms. Shea, you did a wonderful job of really honing in on how important the microbiome is. And let's backtrack for those listeners who don't know what that means. You know, we're speaking in shorthand to a degree. What is the microbiome?
So the microbiome is it's a combination of all of the microbes that exist in and on the human body. And so those microbes can be bacteria, they can be viruses, they can be yeasts and fungi. And these microbes you might recognize as what's on the label of your yogurt container. So it'll say beneficial microbes or communities or something like that. And so those microbes that inhabit the yogurt, those are part of the microbes that live in the gut. And there are millions and millions of microbes that live in and on the body. And you have different communities of microbes depending upon where on the body it is. So you have one community of microbes in your armpits that's completely different from the ones on your eye, for example, or in your nostrils or in your navel. And those are different from the ones that are in your gut. And these microbes we're finding, there's about a 1-to-1 ratio of human cells to microbes in and on the body. These microbes do a lot of different things. So they interact with the cells of the body. They can switch on genes. For example, if we need blood vessels produced in a certain area, the microbes in the body can recognize that and switch on genes. When we are developing, the microbes in the gut actually train our immune cells to understand what is friend and what is foe in the body. And thereby the immune cells can respond to invading pathogens later in life. They help to balance the hormones in the body. So the microbes have a lot of different functions. They help to metabolize toxins that we come into contact with. So taking a lot of the work off of the liver, for example, microbes can manufacture vitamins that we might not produce ourselves with our own cells, or that we may not be getting enough of in our diet. So there's almost an endless list to all of the things that the microbes in the body, the surface protein on the microbes and the metabolites, or what the microbes produce, can do.
That's amazing. It's so delicate and it's so integral to our cellular health. I didn't realize it was a 1-to-1. I knew there was a lot, but I didn't realize how many. And the fact that they're varied depending on where on the body they are. So that's interesting. What's in the ear, what's in the nose, and what's in the throat are completely different and have a place. I mean, it's really amazing how the body works. And so I want to backtrack again to the interstitium, because that's another organ essentially that I don't think people really understand. It's a huge amount of real estate in the body, right? It's the area between everything, between the organs, between the blood vessels. Is that the way to think about it?
Yes, and the fluid that is part of that organ, that coats that organ.
And so that area, is it where a lot of waste and toxins can be housed if we can't remove them the natural way?
Some people believe that. It's also a thoroughfare for the transport of information from one part of the body to another. So I'll give you an example. There are researchers that are working with dermal administration of vaccines. So putting a vaccine on the skin and finding that that vaccine ends up creating a systemic response throughout the body. And they're not quite sure how that's happening, but they suspect that the mechanism of action behind that has something to do with the interstitium. And it's fascinating that in Chinese medicine, the interstitium was recognized as the sanjiao or the triple warmer for thousands of years. And in Western medicine, we just recently acknowledged it because it had to be seen on a living body. So the interstitium as an organ, as its own continuous structure with its own function, had to be observed not on a cadaver, but on a living being. And so it's not like you can just sort of look at it in an isolated way with a microscope or something like that. You have to actually visibly see it. So the fluids in the interstitium that surround, that bathe the connective tissue and all the tissues, those fluids are continuous with the rest of the fluids in the body and become the other fluids in the body. So like the interstitium helps to pull, it helps with the mesentery, it can help to regulate the blood pressure by pulling fluids out of one area and putting them in another. So there, the plasma in the blood is the same fluid as the interstitial fluid. It's just a matter of where that fluid is in the body that it gets its name or its purpose or its function from. So your saliva is continuous with the fluid in your lymph or in your circulatory system as plasma. So I find that interesting that all of the fluids are actually, it's more an issue of where they are and what they do, not that they're a different thing.
That's really fascinating. So from the standpoint of that, a concept of like things being slow moving or sludge like, or basically not able to flow freely, is that something that massage and yoga and even energy medicine is able to get that moving so that it can perform whatever duty it needs to?
Right. And that's one of the principles behind acupuncture and behind massage, is that the fluids will move better. And that in turn will free up the movement of qi. So the qi in the body, or the electromagnetic energy and the radiation that we emit, like everything that we don't necessarily think of as vital life force energy from a Western medicine standpoint, is very important in Eastern medicine, and actually is responsible for the regulation of the heartbeat and the breathing rhythm and the electrical impulses that drive our thoughts. So the qi is what it's called in Chinese medicine anyway. It's called prana in yogic and Ayurvedic traditions. And this qi can kind of get stuck if there's an accumulation of fluid somewhere in the body. So it won't circulate as well. And if the qi is not circulating as well, then it's sort of like a chicken and an egg thing, where then more fluid can accumulate. So the fluid might be accumulating because there's a stagnation of qi. That can also be something that happens. So through these practices that help to transport the fluid from one place to another, through any of these bodywork practices, you're helping to facilitate the smooth flow of qi and blood and fluids throughout the body. And in Chinese medicine, we say that if the qi is flowing smoothly, that there is no disease and there is no pain. So a smooth flow of qi and blood is what we're going for.
So you just described modalities that people can do, whether it's acupuncture or massage. What about thinking? Can you, by being positive, by being with one with nature and God, is that a way to get it moving without movement? Is it just
absolutely
okay?
Absolutely. And there are, again, millennia of information from traditions on meditation and visualization practices that are very powerful yet subtle techniques that we can utilize. So, for example, I just read an article about what's called the researchers from that did this study call it backward contagion. And it's the idea that if you are angry about something and you write it on a piece of paper and you throw it in the trash, in this study, they found that it absolutely helps to release the anger. And so this is something that we do in visualization practices, guided healing practices, metta meditation, yoga nidra, where you're allowing yourself to quote unquote pretend that you are experiencing a certain state, or that you are being bathed with light or spaciousness or different colors or sensations of compassion and well-being. And these visualizations have a physical effect on the body.
That's amazing. There's so many, I guess each sense, right, can be, you know, used in different ways to arrive at the same point. You just mentioned color. And is that, I've heard of color therapy and light therapy. Is that what you're describing, going, using those modalities as a way to move energy?
Yes, you can do that as well. And you can also visualize different colors to help affect specific changes in the body and in the psyche.
That's amazing. The body is so, it's so complex. I can imagine, I would think smells can do it too, no?
Absolutely.
So there is some aromatherapy.
Yes, yes. And in taste as well. So in Chinese medicine, we categorize the plant substances that we use in the herbal medicine according to taste and according to what type of change they affect in the body, whether they create more coolness or more heat, more dryness, or more juiciness. And the tastes, very interestingly, are being found to reside throughout the body, so not just on the taste buds. And I like to use this example when I'm teaching, just to give people an idea of how widespread the accuracy of these ancient traditions is, and how we're just, like with our Western studies and instrumentation, really confirming, you know, what the ancients have been passing down for thousands of years. And so one of those things is that there are taste receptors for the bitter taste on the heart. And the herbal substances we use in Chinese medicine to clear excess heat from the heart, which can be very damaging to a person's psyche, because in Chinese medicine, excess heat in the heart can create things like palpitations, insomnia, anxiety, nervousness. And so when we give these bitter herbs, they are designed, it says in the text that they go to the heart channel. And that is what we need to do in order to help clear the heat from the heart, is administer these bitter cooling substances to help bring balance. And so, and that goes back to kind of what you were saying before the first break, is that what can we do to help sort of cultivate our microbiome? And in traditional medicine practices, we don't look at the pathogen so much as we look, or the diseased state or the diagnosis, so much as we look at the pattern with the person. And the pattern with the person is actually us recognizing and sort of diagnosing what their inner ecosystem is like, what their constitution is like. And so you can have four different people with the same diagnosis from a Western medicine standpoint, but they will have four different diagnoses in Chinese medicine.
You see, I love that. That to me is about individualized healthcare. It's not one size fits all. And everybody is so complex. So if they're out of balance because they have a heartbreak, or they're, you know, really sad because they lost a person that they didn't handle it, you know, they didn't deal with it correctly, all those things can present as you just, just think about it a different way, with the same disease, but your balancing modality, what you're using to right the ship, differs depending on the patient. So what I would ask, how much, well, you know, for us, the history taking is key. I would think it's the same thing. How deep do you have to go? And that's, I mean, maybe it's not a question you can answer, but you have to go deep into what caused their, you know, their history, what their life was like, what they felt about things. Is that the level that you have to go to in order to be correct in how you treat that person?
Ultimately, I think if you're a good diagnostician of the pulse, you don't even need to ask those questions.
Wow.
Yeah. So there are stories of the Dalai Lama's doctor who practiced Tibetan medicine. And Tibetan medicine is a combination of Chinese medicine, Tibetan traditional medicine, and Ayurvedic medicine. And he would be able to read someone's pulse. We call it reading the pulse. So it's not just that you're listening to the rate and the evenness of the pulse, if there are any irregularities in the pulse, but we use three fingers and we listen to several pulse positions. So we listen to a superficial position up by the skin with three fingers, and then a middle position, and then a deep position. And then we feel up and down for where there may be little blips in between those positions as well, which tell us like if the diaphragm isn't functioning well in a certain area, or it gives you a ton of different information. And it's been reported that the Dalai Lama's doctor was so proficient at pulse reading that he could predict if someone didn't change a particular lifestyle factor, something that may arise for them 6 months down the road. That's like a master.
I'll say, wow. I feel like our CT scans and our blood work are useless compared to something like that. I mean, that's impressive, to put it mildly. On that note, let's take our second break and come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Bridget Shea, and you can go to her website. It is agelesshealingarts.com. And there's a wealth of information. You also teach classes and workshops. Do people have to come to your physical address, or can they do things by online?
No, I do online as well as in person. And that's one of the positives that came out of the last few years, is that so many people are comfortable with Zoom now and other video chat type applications, that I can now offer pretty much all of my classes either in person or online. I do both.
That's awesome. And yeah. Do you have a specific, an average of what people, I mean, COVID kind of did a lot of things to folks from an emotional standpoint, being separated, you know, loneliness, all these things that have hit the population. Do you find that there's something, a preponderance of things that people are seeking you out for?
Well, I would have to say the first thing that comes to mind is that this winter was atrocious with pathogens. Mm-hmm. I mean, people were getting very ill, respiratory illnesses mostly, and having issues with the inflammation and the, you know, the residual effects from their immune system from those illnesses for a long time, weeks and months. So that was this winter, that was quite predominant. People with lingering cough and phlegm. And I think what ends up happening, so my practice is very heavily acupuncture based. That's usually what people come in the door for when they first start coming to the clinic. And oftentimes people will come in because they're experiencing some aspect of physical pain. But once they get in the door and they realize the benefit of the session on so many levels that they didn't even consider at first, they will come in for other things. So people will come in for allergies, for example, for allergy relief, seasonal allergies in particular. And what I found over the years is that if you have seasonal allergies and you have acupuncture, that the acupuncture during that season that you start the treatments in will help with the symptoms. But if you continue with maintenance treatments throughout the year, that the following season, the allergies are much less, the severity of them. I found that to be really fascinating. And there is acupuncture and Chinese herbs that are very useful for the treatment of allergy symptoms, especially seasonal allergies. Or people will come in, with pain and realize how relaxing the sessions are. And they'll just keep coming back in for stress relief, because who isn't experiencing some form of stress? I mean, it's especially, you know, in the past decade, it's been amping up, I feel. And people will come in for digestive issues, hormonal regulation, fertility issues, sleep. A lot of times I'll work with people who are weaning off of a medication, whether it's a medication for reflux or whether it's a medication for depression or anxiety. And so to help ameliorate some of those side effects from the medication withdrawal, the acupuncture can be very beneficial.
It's amazing how plastic this is in terms of being able to help people balance. And isn't it really about homeostasis, about putting people or the cellular, emotional, everything back in balance? I think the body's self-healing, but there's so many distractions and so many, like you said, medicines that can actually mask and kind of thwart the body's ability to write itself. And this just seems like, to me, the most clear and, you know, distilled way to get there. And I've done Qigong and Tai Chi, and there's nothing like you're in a zone when you're in these sessions. Like, you're not in your body. I've had that experience where you are literally somewhere else, coming back into your body at the end of the session. I mean, it seems like you're just in ether. I mean, it's your connection to me, the divine, when you're in this type of environment. Is that one way that you see it?
Absolutely. And we talk about the different aspects of what makes up a human being in traditional medicine. So we talk about we have our physical body, and we have our pranic, or our body, that the aspect of our body that the chi flows through. And then we have our mental and emotional body. And then we have what I call the wisdom body, or it's in the yogic texts, it's talked about as the intellectual body, but it's that aspect of us that can kind of see things from a higher perspective and that can access our own inner well of peace. And then we have the spiritual body. And it's that spiritual body that I think you're talking about when you have that experience that you sort of leave and then you come back. And it's that aspect of us that's aware that it can transcend time and space. And that to be completely in that body and connected with ourselves on that level, I guess you could say, is very healing. And if we could all do it more often, I think we'd all be in a lot better shape.
I totally agree with that. There's no stress when you come back in. It's like you took a vacation. That's the best way to describe it. Just speaking about that agelessness, my practitioner, talked about Chinese medicine and the fact that there are, pathways in our system that precede us, right? From our parents, our whole family tree type of thing. Is that real? I mean, is that something that people can think about? The things that happen in the history of our family can affect us, even though we don't, psychologically know it, it still can affect us.
Absolutely. I know that there have been things that have come out recently about our inherited tendencies through our DNA and certain genes getting activated based on our ancestors' experiences that, they hand down to us. So, I might not be afraid of spiders, but somebody else might be terrified of them. And it might not be something they learned in this life. It might be something that was passed down through their DNA because someone in their past had a terrible experience with a spider so bad that it stayed with them and affected the genealogy along the way. And in Chinese medicine and in yogic teachings, we talk about how when someone is forming in utero, that there is an energetic blueprint that arises before the cells even can turn into anything yet. So that energetic blueprint comes in, and that's like the eight extraordinary meridians, we call it. And they're the really, really deep, subtle pathways in the body that form before we actually form into what looks like a person. And that anywhere along the line where our mother or our father or somebody, close to us in our family that's that close experiences any kind of a trauma, it can affect the way the chi flows through our meridians. And there are systems of healing in use today that are specifically designed to access that information. So, for example, some energy healers will purposely be working with someone to help clear their ancestral karma, you might say, or the residue of ancestral trauma that's been passed down to their DNA so that they don't pass it or they don't experience it any further. And there are acupuncturists who do specific types of acupuncture that we're using points on the person's body to affect the point in time in development in utero that they experienced a trauma, which was actually probably the mother's or their father's trauma at that time that influenced a specific pattern that they've carried into this life that they want to heal. So there very much is that aspect to the medicine. And it may sound woo-woo, but a lot of the guidelines in Chinese medicine, Ayurveda, can sound woo-woo because there just isn't the science yet to back it up, is the way I look at it. So if there's two things I can recommend for people, it's to look to ancient wisdom for guidance in how to balance themselves and to remember that their nature.
On that note, let's take our last break, because that's a great place to, stop and think about what you just said, because it's really fascinating. So let's take our last break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living Solution. Again, we're speaking with Ms. Bridget Shea. And again, you can go to her website, and it is called agelesshealingarts.com. Before the break, just speaking about clearing energy, and you think about the limitations, honestly, of the Western medicine of just taking medicines to blunt your thinking process, to make you sedate you, all these things never get to the root of the problem. And if you could open yourself up, literally, to having all of these pathways cleared, and basically it sounds like resetting your what makes you, your essence, that's healing, in my opinion. That's how you change the dynamics. That's how you not pass things to your children and live in a manner that you're just existing. I think people should be in a state of joy, you know, aside from everything else going on in the world. It's outside of us. They can't control what our essence is. Is that a way that people can think that that is the ultimate power, is to control your ability to enjoy yourself, to have joy, to have peace? That's what seems to me, if you really access society, peace is the last thing that people tend to experience.
And that's exactly what I was just going to say. We don't prioritize that. We don't prioritize self-care, because self-care means not texting that person back right now, or it means not overextending ourselves, or it means not working those crazy hours. It doesn't mean that all the time, but it does mean that a lot of the time, and that those things are not socially acceptable yet. So we need to start prioritizing our inner peace and our self-care so that we can be whole, that we can experience our wholeness, so that we can experience joy on a regular basis, just like we experience grief and fear and anger. That's really important. And yeah, opening yourself through whatever practice, and also opening yourself to the idea that you don't always need to take something, whether it's not just a pharmaceutical, but so many times, like, we're in that mindset where we just want to take something. You mentioned that in the beginning. That like kind of pill taking consciousness, it applies to everything. It applies to herbs. It applies to pharmaceuticals. So thinking in terms of the fact that since we're nature and we have all of these cells that do all these things and all of these microbes that help our cells do these things that keep us vital and strong and alive, that what do we think we can do internally? Like, can we just rely on our own inner pharmacy to help manufacture the chemicals that we need to thrive? And what does that mean? So where can I get out of the way? Like, if I know that I'm not sleeping enough, maybe I need to make sleep a priority. Or if I know I'm overeating at 10 o'clock at night, maybe I need to, you know, adjust that. So it's these little practical things too. So yes, opening ourselves up to things like energy medicine and allowing ourselves to be in a space where we can let someone else help our body and our mind get to our own inner faculties is huge. And then recognizing the small steps we can also take in our own lifestyle choices that help our bodies by getting our minds and what we think we want or what we think we have to do out of the way so that our body can do what it knows naturally to do.
I think you said something really powerful, and that's the ability to let, you know, you think about when you, anything painful, you don't want to, it's a human nature, I think, not to want to address it, just to kind of push it down. And what I was struck when I first started, you know, accessing the energy medicine was that you didn't do anything. You let, you know, you were there in the room and it was done for you, right? That energy was moved. You just experienced the benefit of it. So to me, it wasn't work at all, which is when you go to therapy and that sort of thing, it's talking and it's a lot of energy that you have to expand. This was different. It was, I just felt like it just happened and I was just a bystander. So it wasn't work, but the benefit was amazing. Just, it's almost addictive because you feel like there's this peace, this center, this grounding that you don't feel when you're masking it some way. And I just wanted people to understand it's something that when you go to a practitioner, they are helping, they're doing this for you. Is that, did I take it the right way? Because that's how I felt. I was just enjoying the benefit of somebody doing the work for me.
Right, right. You don't have to think about or do anything. It's they're holding the space for you, and they're helping to, they're giving your body and your mind the space so that it can sort of almost magically put you into this relaxed state where it gets the chance to reorganize itself, to like reset itself, like you said, and for you to connect to your own source of inner peace and resilience and strength. And yes, they are doing the work. They are doing the energy work where they're moving the energy, they're adding energy, they're taking energy away. It's a very peaceful, non-invasive, and relaxing way to heal. And I think that that sort of healing is so sought after right now. Mm-hmm. I'm finding that, I would say, like, from the pandemic and everything, all the stress, that people just want to lay there and they want somebody to do something for them to help them to relax because they can't even get there themselves. And I think that those sorts of modalities in the energy fields in the energy medicine field are hugely beneficial right now, more than ever.
I absolutely agree. And I think the two motions to me that really was poignant in terms of my personal experience was pain and anger. Those are the two things that you just, you know, you're part of society, you just kind of get over it and keep it moving. But, you know, losing a loved one, grief in that way, but having to continue to move on, that was just, it was like a weight lifting off. And obviously we're all part of a society that's a lot of insults come at people, and we take them on. We don't realize we're taking them on, and it shows up in things that you don't even realize. Short temper, you know, can't sleep, quick to anger kind of things. All of that just got pushed. It's like gone, which I thought was really medicinal. And I think if nothing else, people would really benefit from those two aspects of energy medicine.
Absolutely.
You know, time goes way too quickly on the show, but I wanted to make sure that people knew how to reach you, how to access your workshops, and how to, you know, if they want to, and they should want to access your services, how can they do that?
So you can go online to my website. It's www.agelesshealingarts.com. And you can go to the calendar or to the schedule. It's got the same, both have the same information on them, but they're different visually. So whatever one resonates with you, you can look at. And all of the upcoming classes and workshops are there, and they're updated on a weekly basis. If you want to email me, it's info@agelesshealingarts.com. I'm on Facebook at Ageless Healing Arts and also on Instagram at Ageless Healing Arts.
I want to thank you so much for joining me. It was just a wonderful hour to spend with you. I feel I want to turn on every single patient that I have to this, you know, this extension of how they can heal themselves and get their power back. And it's so empowering to know you don't need anybody to do it. You can do it yourself. It doesn't cost anything. I think it takes courage to want to look in and stop being exposed to and being, I guess, distracted by all of the things outside of us. Would you say?
I agree 100%.
Well, once again, thank you so much for your time. I want to thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. And thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk Events.